Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm her mom, Christy.
And this is a very special preview kind of episode. Yeah, we are doing the first episode of season one of The Crown called Wolverton Splash. The reason we're doing this episode, if you have been paying attention to the news at all, Queen Elizabeth II has recently passed away, and we wanted to honor her by doing, we're going to eventually be doing The Crown on this podcast, but we kind of want to do Ted Lasso season two first really quickly before we do it, because that, at least in my opinion, and we both agreed that like it's a bit of a sharp turn to go from Ted Lasso season one to The Crown. So we decided that we're going to do this little preview episode in honor of the Queen because it's more recent. And then after we're done with Ted Lasso season two, we'll pick up with season one, episode two of The Crown and go from there.
Right. And it may be that I like just stick this in as a broadcast, like right in the middle of even season one of Ted Lasso, just to, you know, like note that, yeah, we're going to be doing The Crown. And because The Crown is a terrific show. And if you've not watched it, this gives you an opportunity to start watching it because, and a good reason to, because it is a great, great show to watch. It is really beautifully done. And I would highly recommend it to anybody. So that's part of the reason we wanted to do this. And of course, in honor of Her Majesty the Queen, who really was just an incredibly influential figure for like her whole life. It's wonderful to see, and it's fictionalized obviously, but yeah, there's a lot of true events that are reflected in The Crown. And so it's really a good way to look at and personalize the history that's involved in her life. So I think it's really
her in many ways, yeah. Because a lot of people just see her as a monarch, but not necessarily as a person. And it's interesting because I certainly, and I don't think, obviously, like you weren't alive either for many of the events, especially in season one. So I'm learning a lot about British history and stuff like that. Well, not like I'm not paying that much attention to it because obviously, again, as you said, it's fictionalized, but many of like the major events that happened in British history during her early reign especially are reflected in the first two seasons. And so it's very interesting to see, and I feel educated whenever I watch it.
Right, right. And I do too. And I do feel like this is a really terrifically done show. I didn't really realize that the showrunners for this show had done the movie The Queen with Helen Mirren, which I've been meaning to watch and haven't watched, so I need to watch it. That's now on my list. But it, you know, that focused more on the end of her life, and this focuses on just the whole span of it. And it's really, really cool. So for those of you who have not watched it, the first season, and they change actors like every two seasons, but the first season, this cast is just
fantastic.
Oh my God, they're fucking fabulous. So yeah, absolutely. So we do have our regular disclaimers and all of those things. So disclaimer wise, put it out there.
Well, our disclaimers are the same as they always are. We will probably be cursing. I don't know if we're going to be cursing too much for this one, but probably.
Unless I think we curse more like in later seasons, like with Charles.
Most definitely. But yeah, we are doing that. And then spoilers for The Crown, probably just season one, at least in this episode. Probably not that for like future ones, but I don't know.
Right, right. And of course, you know, I think as things go along, we'll talk about cast, we'll talk about, you know, just all the things. So I think that there's going to be a lot more controversy than, you know, if you're listening for controversy and that kind of thing, like for us to be arguing about stuff or whatever, then there might be more of that with The Crown than with Ted Lasso, because we're both like, oh my God, Ted Lasso is so great.
Ominous.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, from the discussions we've had at home when watching The Crown, we've watched The Crown a couple of times. So
we have.
I think we're going to get a lot more out of it probably. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the first season, season one, episode one. Oh, what are we drinking? What are you drinking?
Oh yeah. I have these tea bags that I brought from home, and I have a Twinings Earl Grey and Jasmine.
Oh, nice. Nice.
I bought some of those from home. So that's what I'm having. I usually have the Keurig pods for Earl Grey, but you said in your text that you were having Earl Grey. So I wanted to be a little bit different.
Right. Well, the reason, and I am having Earl Grey, I'm almost done actually, I don't drink it the way the Queen drinks it, but apparently that is her favorite tea. Oh. Is Earl Grey. And so I wanted to do that in honor of her. I looked up like things that she has been known to have as beverages. And when we do the crown, I'm definitely going to be like exploring, like she has a specific wines that she drinks, champagne, there's Dubonnet and gin, you know, things like that she drinks. So yeah, I'm a little interested. But Earl Grey is her favorite, and Twinings, I think they have the Royal Mark, or I've forgotten what they call it. The Royal brand or whatever that they are authorized to make things for the Queen. And so there are several British makers and like for champagnes and stuff. And I was fascinated about this. I was looking stuff up online. Apparently they actually make, there's a vineyard at Windsor Castle and they make champagne there.
That doesn't surprise me.
It doesn't surprise me either. I'm probably not gonna be able to get it here, but whatever. whatever. But Bollinger, which is French, is a good alternative. And at some point I'm gonna do that. Anyway, in the interim, we are gonna start with season one, episode one, which is called Wolferton Splash. And it's such a weird title. A lot of the titles of these episodes are like, why did they call it that? And you really have to pay attention to figure out.
Well, I mean, he says it in a line later on, but yeah.
Right.
The thing is, it's like most first episodes are just called pilot. So this was a fun change.
Right, right. And so this starts in 1947 with King George the Sixth.
It is.
Yeah. and he is played by Jared Harris. And
he's so
good. I mean, if you have not seen him in other things, he's in, I think there's a Netflix series called Chernobyl.
No, that's HBO, I think.
Is that HBO? Okay.
I think it is.
Okay. But he's been in a number of things, particularly recently. And he's just
fantastic. Really,
and he has like this gravitas and this kind of intellectualism that he brings to it. But again, that humanizing quality, I just love that.
And it's really interesting role of King George the Sixth, because of, I think that's a lot of pressure, especially at this point, to play that kind of role, because it's already been popularized. Well, not popularized necessarily, but like it's already been played by people like
Colin Firth. Yes. Colin Firth.
I mean, it's like, what are you going to do? But because Colin Firth played him in The King's Speech. And that's a very, very good movie. And it's won awards and it's all that stuff. So playing something like succeeding Colin Firth is a big task, especially for this role. So, but he does it absolutely fantastically, because he does a lot. I don't remember how much of George's life King George's life that the King's Speech follows. Does it go to the end of his life?
No, I don't think so.
I haven't watched it in a while, because
I think the King's Speech just covers his coming to power and in the middle of the war, I think.
Yeah, and the abdication and all that stuff. Yeah,
yeah.
Because in this one, but you get to see, I like that you get to see the latter half of his life in this one, because, and I also like that they didn't just immediately jump into Elizabeth's role, because there was a lot of stuff surrounding her succeeding her father, and a lot of just like really heart-wrenching stuff, but like just general stuff, like to contextualize what's going on. I think it was a good idea for them to start where they started in 1947 with the first signs of well, her marriage, but also the first signs of sickness and stuff like right. that in King George the Sixth. And you see that, and I wrote down, coughing up blood is always a good sign.
yeah, no. And you know, he does the thing that guys, even in this generation, just like, oh, I'm just gonna blow it off. You know, I'll ask a question. Yeah. About it, but, you know, everybody's just kind of, oh, no big deal. Here, have another cigarette. kind
of thing. That comes into a conversation a little bit later. But right now, at the very beginning, you see he's not Prince yet, but Philip.
Matt Smith.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and do the interlude that is bound to happen.
You know it's coming. The tangent about
this is going to be my cursing portion of this podcast, because I fucking love Claire Foy and Matt Smith in these roles.
Oh my god,
they are fucking fantastic.
They are amazing.
It really is insane. Like, I, regardless of especially your feelings, I know you have some strong feelings about casting later on. I don't really have too strong a feeling one way or another. Like, there were certain choices made, but whatever. But I always loved Claire Foy and Matt Smith in these roles, and I think that they benefit a lot from being the youthful versions of these characters. Yeah. I think it's a big plus for them, because they get to do the before and the after, so you get to see that kind of character growth, whereas in later seasons you do have some growth, but like, it's not nearly as much because so much has happened since then. But
right, and the focus shifts, like, you know, you've got all the kids and the crazy and you just all the things, right?
But this is focused on Claire Foy and Matt Smith's roles and
their relationship in. And yes. Of course, that's the whole humanizing quality here, and I think that's part of the brilliance of starting with King George, is that you get to see that first and foremost this is a family, right? And so, you know, the building that family relationship and seeing the juxtaposition of the family with the job, and then, you know, the job of being a royal, and then there's the job of, you know, that tension between being a royal in a constitutional monarchy with, you know, like the political side of it. And, you know, they show like the structure that she's coming into, because I think there's a lot of that is expressed by George and that she's by King George, and that, you know, this is the role she's going to assume, and these are the expectations that the world has for her.
Yes, and it's fascinating because it's not like England has not had a queen before. Like, she's Queen Elizabeth II, like, and also there's Queen Victoria and all that stuff. And so you've had female monarchs before, so that's not the big change for them. But the timing of it is very important, because it was during an age of change and a lot of questioning the monarchy and questioning all the territories and all that stuff. So it's very fascinating to see, not necessarily
the imperial element to it. Yeah,
exactly. And I think that it's nice that it's not like, it's the fact that she's a woman is not the revolutionary part. I really like that they don't emphasize that too much. They do emphasize it a little bit, because it is a big deal after quite a few kings, like, a queen is back. But I think that it was a good choice for them to focus more on the context of the time and not necessarily the fact that she's a woman, because she is a ruler. She's not just a queen, she is a ruler, and she did a lot of stuff. So I like that they focus more on that, not on the fact that she, oh yeah, girl power, she's amazing, she's a girl. And it's just like, no, she's doing what she's doing her job. And I like that they don't emphasize that too much. But basically right now, Philip is renouncing his Greek titles because he was Greek. And there's a lot of
right. He was a Greek. There's a whole lot of history, and they do get into that later in the season 2.
Right.
So we're gonna not get into that too much at this point, but I do, and I didn't say this, but we'll come to it. Never mind. Go ahead.
But he's renouncing his Greek titles. He was Greek royalty, I guess. He is named Duke of Edinburgh.
Right.
And struggled a bit during his speech. His stutter, like the way that the actor does the stutter and the memory loss and all that stuff. Like, he is I really do love the way that he does it, because having someone fake a stutter, an actor fake a stutter, it can be a little bit much, if you know what I mean. Like, they can overemphasize it or make it be very not noticeable at all. But I think he strikes a really good balance, because it's something he has overcome for the most part as a sovereign, because that was the whole point of the king's speech, and that was the whole thing. But he's gotten past this king's speech part, and he has gotten to the point where, like, he's when his emotions are high, which is basically this entire part of the story, is he is struggling to speak, and he is, and he's like, his memory's not what it used to be. He has to do all this stuff, and so he
struggles. Well, I got the impression that this was not necessarily a memory problem, but a distraction problem. Like, you know, he's distracted by the fact that, hey, I was coughing up blood.
Yeah, no, I think that he has a lot on his mind. I think that affected his memory. He's not necessarily suffering from memory loss. He's just kind of like, I think I didn't emphasize that correctly. It's just, you know what I mean? He's distracted, he's concerned, and he's stuttering. And
well, he's also giving up his baby, because, you know, the whole point, the reason that Philip is renouncing his titles is he's about to marry Elizabeth
the next day.
Right. And you know, it's a big emotional thing for the whole family, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, part of what is so great about this is, you know, just that interaction. You know, he gives, you know, a little bit of a speech, like, you know, he knights, he gives the title to Philip. But Matt Smith and Claire Foy, I mean,
okay,
she's so nervous, like, how's this gonna go? She's like peeking around the corner. She's not supposed to be part of the ceremony at all. She's not even supposed to be there, but she's like checking to make sure everything's okay and that they actually go through with it.
Yeah, I love that she has the nervous energy of a bride to be, and she also is just, she's nervous about the politics of it. Nobody, you find out later that nobody really supported the match, but she got it anyway, and she's just very excited for that. And so once Philip leaves the room and is like congratulated and all that stuff, he goes and she's just like, and so how'd it go? And like, we got through it. It's just like, you don't have to sound so excited about it. And
right,
I have this conversation. I like that she condemns smoking at this point, because that comes into play later.
It does. But one of the things I love is just their chemistry as
actors. Oh my God, it's so good.
Well, right. I mean, it's so obvious that you know, the characters are madly in love with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But they have these, you know, these roles where they're supposed to be stiff and whatever. And Philip's always the one who's like kind of pushing the envelope a little bit, and he's like, watch out, me kiss her. And
it's, I love,
like,
that part so much.
It's so sweet. It's so sweet.
Because you get the idea that the roles are different, because like she's talking about, well, he's just like, oh yeah, stag night, yeah, blah blah blah, it's my last night of freedom or something. And she's just like, well, have you won the greatest prize on earth? It's like, that's certainly what they think. And she's just like, what? And he's just like, and I think that too. And I'm like, oh, that's so cute. But yeah,
he played with her a little bit. He's so smart and funny, and
I'm so witty. I love it so much, because that's a big thing that happened with later on. That's another thing that I feel is missing, but that just could be like the way that they age up the characters. But I think that that's the little playfulness, which you get a little bit of it, but in these first two seasons, well, first season especially, you get all of this like nice, like honeymoon kind of energy that is just so infectious, and I love it. And it's so great.
It is. And I want to add this too, because we've been talking about Matt Smith, because I think, you know, he generates a lot of that, and he's such a terrific actor, and he's having a moment right now. He's also on House of the Dragon, which he's like the best thing on House of the Dragon by far.
I watched a little bit of one episode, and I agree.
and of course that episode was like, you know, episode 3 of House of the Dragon, if you're watching it, is like the Matt Smith episode, and he doesn't even speak a single line. So, you know, he's terrific. Need, yeah, he doesn't, but he is terrific as an actor.
But
we can't so under- much. the subtlety. Hang on. He was also, I guess, you know, like a lot of people, you fell in love with him as Doctor Who, you know, that kind of stuff way back in the day. But Claire Foy.
I was about to say, you can't underdo what Claire Foy did with this role.
Well, right. So she, I mean, it's such an understated role. And, you know, she has the look, and you know, I know that this is going to come up later, but she looks so much like the Queen did when she was young. And we're seeing all of these pictures now. And she, you know, this woman, Queen Elizabeth, I'm talking about now, was like the most photographed woman in the world, like forever. And she had this like Hollywood glamour about her almost. And, you know, not in
natural
any
natural Hollywood glamour. Like, I'm jealous.
Yeah, me too. But you know, just very refined, controlled. Her image is very managed. And she knows that. She knows that that's what's expected of her. And she knows, you know, like she's got to stay within the lines. Like she's just all, you're never going to see her like not in a dress kind of thing. You know, she's just always going to be in very specific, you know, outfits and
appropriate clothes,
all well-made and perfectly tailored and blah, blah, blah. But the delivery of the speeches, she sounds so much, cause you've heard, and, you know, again, these are getting played a lot, these speeches that the Queen has made over the years, Claire Foy's cadence and her voice, she does such a brilliant job. You know, she's not mimicking the Queen. She is embodying her.
Yeah.
And it's really, really well done. I'm super impressed with just how well that whole essence is being recreated.
And I think another important thing, now that since we're talking about chemistry at this point, it's very important for it to not be one-sided. And I think that these two in particular are a textbook example of not one-sided chemistry, because I feel like they both have the charm that, like, individually, they both have a lot of charm and a lot of charisma, especially Matt Smith, like having a certain kind of charisma, whereas Claire Foy they do the character's chemistry well. They naturally have a great like rapport and chemistry and stuff, like that you can tell as actors, you can tell they have great chemistry, but they are great at being in character and the character's specific kind of chemistry, because you got Philip, who's more playful and can
the bad boiler
and like push her buttons and stuff like that. It's kind of like a Keely Roy situation where he can like press her buttons and stuff, but she's like shy and all that stuff. But you can see that they have the right kind of chemistry for this, and they're both like doing very, very well with making sure that's clear. And I think that is something that cannot be forgotten, especially for these first two seasons, because we are moving on to the third like round of cast, but we can't forget how like awesome these people were at the beginning.
Right. And I do, you know, we skipped right past, because we went straight to the whole naval officers, SAG night, all of that stuff.
No,
we're doing it now.
I haven't even gotten to the opening credits.
Right. So we're just getting to the opening credits now.
Yeah.
Right.
And the opening credits are awesome.
They are. I love the way that this is done. Again, you know, they do it like as the basically the metal work of making a golden crown. Mm-hmm. But the music, and I didn't even realize until I was watching it this go around that it's Hans Zimmer.
Oh, is it?
It is. And so
that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It's like, oh, that's really good. Yeah, okay, awesome.
I always thought it was good. I just didn't know if it was Hans Zimmer.
I didn't either. So again, you know, these are all these things you pick up. But then the next scene, did you have anything else you wanted to say about that?
No, it's just getting ready for the wedding.
Right. So I love that, you know, again, and we'd seen some of this in the King's speech too. King George, when he's emotional, like has a really hot temper. I mean, mm-hmm. just, you know, he wants everything done exactly right. He has no patience with imperfection in himself. And, you know, that doesn't work. You know, he's not really great with the staff, you know, you know, when things go wrong either. And it's really fascinating to see how the staff manage him.
I love the way that Peter calms him down. Peter is basically his right-hand man kind of guy. He's his main man. And he calms him down with a limerick.
Yeah.
And they both kind of go back and forth. And I think that's a good nod to him getting over his speech impediment and working, him calming himself down with remembering how he can overcome something that has afflicted him. And I think that's a really good way of calming him down. I just thought of that about why they use the limerick.
Well, and again, you know, then they're like, oh, here, like, we'll have a cigarette.
I made a note of that. It's like, and he's still smoking. There's some really funny points where he's smoking, and like, I'm just like, why? It's really funny. And then he loses his temper about the collar. And then they go down and they're getting ready to go in the carriage. But basically, this is the point where you talked about how people were kind of dismissing it. And he mentioned, there was some blood in my spit this morning. What's up with that? What do you think it is? And it's like, was it a couple specks? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And he was just like, all right, it could just be the cold weather. I'm like, that's what I thought. We're not going to worry about it at all. Give me a cigarette. I'm like, dude, maybe think for 2 seconds.
Yeah, that'll calm me down because we're not thinking that that's in any way connected to blood in your coffee. Oh, God. Yeah.
And then they go downstairs, but also the amazing costumes.
Oh my God. You know, it's just amazing. And of course, yeah, they have, it's not just an amazing costume for like the main characters. It's like amazing costumes for everybody.
Mm-hmm. It's like a Bridgerton kind of thing where like, even like if you were like, I think I mentioned this in Bridgerton at some point, but even if you're just a background character, you get like the whole shebang. You get like the best, coolest hair, you get like a cool outfit, and it's just so fun. Yeah. Like if you're in a ball sequence, that'd be so cool. But yeah, everybody gets their moment to shine. And this is also where you get introduced to Vanessa Kirby as Margaret.
And again, brilliant casting. Oh my God.
The first two seasons in particular had fucking fantastic casting. Like, absolutely, you cannot deny. Also, Vanessa Kirby does kind of look like Margaret. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And her delivery. I mean, she's just, and she's the fun girl, right? So, you know,
you don't Elizabeth really see too much of Margaret in this first episode, but you will later on.
You will later on.
Margaret, I think, gets a designated episode each season. Like later, like in the latter half of the season, there's always going to be the Margaret-centric episode. Not that Margaret doesn't have like subplots in episodes, she does, but she usually gets one that follows her in particular in each season, which I love.
Well, right, because again, you know, part of what this series does is it talks about the family. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it does show how, as even the monarch, you've got to deal with, you know, your crazy family, right? You know, your dysfunctional or whatever family. And so that, and I'm not trying to suggest that there's anything, we'll explore those things as they go along, but it is just really beautifully done. So we get introduced to Margaret, who is gorgeous, and her dress is gorgeous. And again, you know, they've replicated the actual dress that Queen Elizabeth wore, you know, to some extent. Oh, it's gorgeous. Yeah. It's gorgeous. And you know, she's such a, and I don't know how tall Claire Foy is, but
she's short.
She's short. And of course, you know, Queen Elizabeth herself was short. So that's not terribly surprising. I looked up, you know, Philip, I guess, was only 6 feet. I thought he was taller. And it may be just because you always see him in relation to the Queen. Really, really tall. But he was 6 feet tall. And I noticed King Charles is 5'10", and I thought he was taller too. And I guess
he was taller too. Well, maybe that's because he's casted in Diana and relation and all that stuff.
Right. And again, you know, you see them, you know, it's interesting to see the proportions, but she's so, Claire Foy is so perfect. She's anxious. She's slightly nervous. And then she gets a little mad at herself for being anxious. You know, she's trying to control it. And she just, you know, is struggling, but her voice is so perfect in this, and her delivery is that little bit, you know, a little bit clipped, a little bit controlled, measured.
Well, I think you're talking about the ceremony at this point, but just before the ceremony, Winston Churchill shows up.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I do introduce.
Well, to be fair, to be completely honest, this is a preview. I really don't give a shit about the political stuff. I really don't. Like, if it could just be about, like, obviously it can't just be about the royal family because there's stuff outside with the prime minister and all that bullshit. But I really just wish about the royal family.
But it affects the royal family too, and it affects how they are viewed and all the stuff that involves them. So Churchill showing up at the wedding, and again, you know, the ego, it's John Lithgow. And, you know, honestly, I questioned his casting because of course he's American question. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
So I questioned the casting of him, although the look he does pretty well. And he comes up again in like later episodes and stuff like that too. But the way they do this is like, he waits for the exact moment the choir is going to start singing to walk into Westminster Abbey, just like, so you know, fun. No, wait, we walk in, you know, and it looks like God has ordained me to like be the prime minister, because he's not at that point. He's just a minister, but he's running. He's trying to get that prime minister spot back. So it is fascinating, and he makes all this commentary. He gives a little bit of background, and it's a good way to do that, I think. But you start hearing about, and you hear it from him, the objections to Philip and his family.
Yeah, and like he says something about Nazis, and that does come into play later on. I can't believe we wait until season two to get all of his backstory, but I do like that we do. But it's very fascinating. His backstory is very fascinating. You get a Philip episode basically,
right?
About his
right backstory. to get him in some context too, because again, you know, you see him, but you don't really get a sense of who he is and how much he has had to overcome in time too. And so I love that we get some of it's fictionalized, of course, but there are factual things that can't be denied and that are addressed in this show. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that, you know, after the wedding, during the vows. Go ahead.
Yeah. You almost missed it. It was so cute. But this is another like moment where I just love the chemistry between the actors, because you get Elizabeth, like you said, is being meek, a little bit more meek and more nervous. She's getting a little upset with herself for being so scared. But during the vows, she's reciting them, and she makes eye contact with Philip, and he's just kind of making a little bit of faces during them, like for each one is just like, for richer, for poor. And he's like, we're always going to be rich. And then it's just like in sickness and in health. And it's just like, mm-hmm. And then she kept in to love, cherish, and obey. She kept in obey, and apparently it was discussed, so whatever. But when she says obey, it's like to love, cherish, and obey, Winston makes a comment and then goes back to Philip, and he's just like, to obey. It is so funny. I just love that.
You're going to obey me.
He calms her down, and it's really cute. And then after the wedding, we go to the photographer, which I must say, I love the photographer character. In later seasons, and he's probably one of my favorite side characters. He's so funny.
I think it's like Cecil Beaton, I think is the photographer's actual name.
I don't even know, but I love him.
Yeah. And he was like the royal photographer for like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
He's just so energetic, and he's just like, okay, beautiful, wonderful, amazing. Now do this. And he has to kiss their asses so much. And it's just like, oh, perfect, perfect, beautiful. Yes. Okay. Now we're going to change the background. Okay. Even better. So beautiful. And it's just, I just love him. I love his energy.
Well, and during the photographing session, the Queen's grandmother, or the Queen Mother to King George, she's talking to the Queen's mother, and she's like, you're underestimating her. She pulled this wedding off and no one wanted it. And she got it done without saying much of anything. She just got her way. Because, you know, I guess, you know, there is power in silence too. And it's something that Elizabeth must have figured out very early. But yeah, she pulled off the match, and the queen's kind of like, well, so what? You know, you overestimate her. And it's like, no.
And this is the queen mother who says that, King George's mother who says that.
Right. Well, and then the king gives her a camera.
Yes, a video camera.
Right. And he's like, you know, if your marriage is half as good as mine, I don't want you to lose. I don't want you to miss a moment of it.
Yeah.
Right. One of the things, and I noticed this too, maybe you didn't, I don't know, but, and I'm sorry to interrupt if you did. When the princess, when Elizabeth is called back over, her mother calls her Lilibet.
Yeah, I did notice that. I didn't note it, but I didn't like write it down, but I was going to, and then I was just like, I don't want autocorrect to screw me over, so I didn't want to put in Lilibet. But right. Yeah, I did notice that. That's really cute. It's a really fun thing, because it proves that they're like a real family, like their cute little pet names, and well, not pet names, but nicknames and stuff like that, that they consistently go through. And it introduces that early, which is good, because you kind of know it's a lot like if somebody like says your middle name, it's like you know what you're in for whenever somebody like says your name in a specific way. So Lilibet is just like, oh, casual, yeah, or like happy, cute, that kind of thing. But in like if you go full name, something's wrong, and yeah, that kind of thing. But I really do like that they establish Lilibet as her nickname.
Yeah. So, well, and of course, you know, I had forgotten like one of her middle names is Alexandra. I mean, can you imagine? Like, they always have like four names for a role.
Elizabeth Alexandra Mary.
Yeah. Elizabeth Alexandra Mary, get over here.
Yeah. The longest name on earth.
Yeah. That'd be hilarious. Then they go out on the balcony to the cheering crowds. And, you know, you see again how well loved George is.
Because
we want the king. Christmas. Yeah. We want the king. We want the king.
And he has a drag, and then he goes of a cigarette.
Yeah. And then he goes. Yeah. God. Cigarette. Calm his nerves. There you go. Then there's like this family montage that you get to see of the early marriage.
And it's confusing because what confuses me is that it says 12 months later. I'm like, there's absolutely no fucking way that's 12 months. So that was like, what I understand now, because I had to kind of like look back at it just to make sure I wasn't going crazy, but it does say 12 months later. But 12 months later is the timing of the first video that you're shown, and not the timing right of like when it leaves, because when it does that, it's like 12 months later, she's 8 months pregnant with Charles. And then you show like Anne's christening and all that stuff. And it's a really cute montage, but when I saw 12 months later, I'm like, you mean 12 years? Like, what are you talking about? Like, there's no way that Anne was born 3 months after. Like, this, that doesn't make any sense. So no, it's 12 months later for the first video and not for the other ones. And it really drove me crazy for a second. I think they probably should have left that out. or done something else, like with the title card, because the title card made it seem like at the end of that montage, it was 12 months, but that's
No, at the beginning of the montage, it's 12 months later. Yeah. So yeah,
they are kind of young. I think Charles might be six. I don't know. Well, maybe not. It doesn't matter how old they are, to be honest. It ends in 1951. So it's been 3 years? Four years? Four years?
Yeah. And they're living on Malta.
How old are they? Anyway, but they were Malta.
I mean, I guess this comes up later, is that there are like the, you know, Charles and Anne are like the first group, and then
it's a big divide
between
the first and second groups. I don't think that Andrew was born until season
significantly two
or something like that, so it's been a while.
We'll get to that, but you know, Andrew and then Philip the younger.
I thought it was Edward.
Oh, you're right. It is Edward. Sorry.
I was about to say, is there Philip the Younger?
What? There isn't. I was wrong. He looks a lot like Philip.
It goes to 1951, and they're in Malta, and Philip is participating with his rowing team. They just won. And I really love this, like, you get to see her as a princess, married princess with her family, but her husband doing his thing with the Navy and all that stuff. And they're just kind of enjoying life and spending time with friends. And
he gets like promoted. He
gets promoted to lieutenant commander. And Charles is the one who like gives him the medal. It's really cute. And then they get the call that the king is having lung surgery. By Martin, who's played by Birdie. So
yeah, Birdie from Downton Abbey, which we'll do someday, but we've got so much to do.
That's gonna be so long, Mom. It's gonna take forever.
That is a long way off, especially if we're gonna do The Crown. So
Birdie from Downton Abbey, to be clear.
So but Martin in this series. Right. And he's such a good guy. He's always, he does the I'm a good guy thing really, really well. And so he's a secretary. He handles all the official stuff. And he lets them know, hey, you know, your dad's having surgery. You got to go. So they go back to London. I guess while the surgery is going on, they get back.
They're there and it's been 2 hours.
Yeah.
Into the surgery.
When they get there. But they, you know, and what they're doing is removing a lung, and you see it.
And you see it, and it's disgusting.
Yeah, it's like black, gray, icky, like clearly not healthy.
Things moving, and I'm just like, this is why I'll never be a doctor. Like, I can't deal with it. It's so gross. Like, I mean, it's not like I'm throwing up, but like, ugh, it's so gross. I don't like it.
Yeah, no, I mean, and so, they get there and it's obvious that people figure it out. Like Philip figures it out, like
he knows.
Yeah, by the way the doctors say, oh, the surgery went well. He's like, you know.
Successful in what they were doing, but doesn't mean that he's out of the woods.
Right.
And catches on to that. He even goes into this room that they did the surgery in, and he's the lung being like wrapped up. It was so gross. But he sees that, and he kind of puts two and two together and gets four and is this like, oh shit.
Right. But he doesn't say anything to anybody. He keeps that private. He knows where the lung is.
Thing to tell. Like, especially if he was going to approach somebody about it, it would probably be Elizabeth, but he doesn't want to worry her it may be wrong. He may be fine. You should trust the doctors, but the doctors are lying. But it's
okay. Yeah, I don't think he thinks that, you know, you should trust the doctors. I think he's just kind of like, it's not my news to tell. It's not my news to share.
It's someone going to be telling Elizabeth that it should be her own father, if the father even knows, which he doesn't.
I mean, it's just so awful. Like, there's all this British. This British stiff upper lip crap, which, you know, I get that is, you know, you have to have this outward calm kind of thing, the keep calm and carry on kind of thing. And so they don't want to disrupt him or upset him, but apparently the doctors don't even bother to fucking
for.
Right. What's the fucking point? But interestingly, Churchill, and this is, you know, part of the side plot, but Churchill gets.
Well, really quickly, just to like bridge the gap, it's 5 weeks post-op, and he finds out that Winston has won the election, and he's like going to be the prime minister for like the seventh time.
Yeah,
or something.
Seventh. He was. I think it was multiple times for him.
It was definitely. I don't know. Then. Basically, Winston has somebody look over the king's medical records, and the person doesn't know that's the king, but he's just like, oh yeah, well, they're talking about this like structural alterations or whatever, because they don't want to say what it really is, and like they don't outright say cancer, but like you kind of know. And he's just like, well, who is this guy anyway? And Winston's just like, oh shit. Oh no. This is bad, and he doesn't know.
So he had just taken power. He comes into, I guess, Downing Street, and there's like a young girl there, another actress that we know who was on Downton Abbey the movie as Queen Mary, and also on Peaky Blinders as Arthur's wife. So,
Yeah, I was thinking, Queen Mary, was she?
Mm-hmm. In the movie, the Downton Abbey movie. You have to watch it again. Anyway, so.
I just didn't realize she was Queen Mary.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah. Her name's Venetia or Bunetia Scott.
Venetia. It's Venetia,
yeah, like autocorrect Venetia in my notes, so I was confused.
Your autocorrect.
But the king, I don't know if it's like right now, but like the king, I have a note that's right now where it says the king is having Elizabeth, is considering to have Elizabeth and Philip do the Commonwealth tour instead of him, which is right. Smart.
Right.
Regardless, because he doesn't know the name yet. But he already knows that he's not going to be in enough like good health that he can do it himself.
Well, right. I mean, they show that even after the surgery, he's still like coughing and having blood in his spit. And so, you know, he's still concerned like, hey, this hasn't gone away. Yeah. And so, you know, he's like, yeah, let's have them do the Commonwealth tour. You know, I'll be fine, but I'm not fine right now. And so he mentions to Churchill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he meets with Churchill and he's just like, congratulations, whatever, aren't you going to congratulate me? I'm doing so well. And Churchill's like, uh-huh. And very awkward.
Okay.
And then once Churchill is home, well, back to Downing Street, he has this conversation with his wife, who's in everything. His wife is literally in everything.
Like, yeah, that actress.
I know she's in Downing Street at some point. She's in everything. It doesn't matter. But he's talking to her and he's basically like, it's cancer. Like, he says it outright. And it's just like, oh God, does he know? It's like who knows? It's like, nobody, especially not the king. It's just like, oh God, this is bad.
Yeah.
But then later on, you see that Philip is remodeling Clarence House for their family, for Elizabeth and their family to live in, and they're having a lot of fun and it's cute and all that stuff. But she's and Elizabeth is going to the palace to have a lunch or tea or something with Margaret, her sister, and her mom. And then this is where you get to the Margaret Peter subplot.
Oh dear God.
Oh, yikes. Talking about how Philip's doing this and that and the other, and Margaret and Peter comes in, and the queen's like, hey, so tell me straight up, is he going to be okay to go to Balmoral for Christmas? And he's just like, I think so. And it's like,
okay. I think it's Sandringham. They actually do Sandringham for Christmas. That George is a Sandringham guy.
Okay.
Rather than
anyway, somewhere for Christmas. And so then you got Margaret being like, well, is Peter coming? I'm sure Papa would love that. And it's just like,
right, well, it's so fucking obvious. And you know, for whatever reason, the mom is just, yeah, she's the queen mother, or the queen, like the princess's mother, is like clueless, but oh my God, it's so obvious. And she, and like the queen, I guess, at that point, and she's like, well, he's going to be with his family and his wife and his kids, and his wife's not going to be happy about that. And oh, but you need to ask. Margaret's just like pushing it. And it's like, oh my God, what is wrong with you?
And once the queen leaves the room, Elizabeth's like, I saw that. And it's just like, you can't tell anyone. And then she's I can see the appeal, but he's married. And she's just like, either way, please don't do blah blah blah. And it's just like, just don't tell anybody. And it's just like, okay, fine, I won't. And she's like, all right, fine, I'm just not gonna tell anybody, it's her business, whatever, she'll do what she's gonna do. And then you get a scene with the king being told about his condition from the doctor, which is so sad. Like, well, yeah. The scenes, a couple scenes later, is even sadder for me. But like, he's told basically, he's just like, okay, so how long? And what can we do about it? It's like, I don't think you understand. We can't do anything. And he's just like, well, how long? It's just like, could be years, but I'd say months. And it's just like, oh shit. And so, he has that weighing over him, like, because he knows what happens after. Like, he knows what's going to be happening with Elizabeth. He knows that she's going to succeed him. he needs to prepare her. Like he needs some time to, he takes some time to process this. And then he has to think about Elizabeth and what's going to happen to her and her family, and has to try to prepare her in some way or another. Anyway, no one in the family knows except Philip has his thoughts about what's going on. He's still smoking when he receives the news. So I'm just like, I guess just maybe make it shorter.
I guess that back then they just didn't really fully understand that there was a connection between smoking and lung cancer. But you know, you'd think that anything that involves your lungs would be, you know, like you'd leave it alone, whatever.
Has something to do with it, but whatever.
Right.
And, they're going to Sandringham.
Yeah.
And
they spend the holidays there. They spend Christmas there.
Yes. And a group of local carolers sing there. It's beautiful. They ask the king to join in, gives him a little paper crown, and it gets very, very emotional. And I was feeling feelings. And
yeah, me too. I mean, and the thing is that he is too, he gets tears in his eyes, the actor does. And you know, he's sick, and he's still like almost beautiful. Crying. Pardon me?
Yes. And Margaret gets tears in her eyes because I think that, and I love the queen who's the only person who claps afterwards. She's just like, okay. We're just gonna try to cut the tension.
But and everybody else is kind of like, oh my god, something's going on here. This is momentous, but we don't know why.
And the next day you see the kids playing around, and I love the guards just standing there watching. It's so funny because the kids are going around the guards and they're just kind of like, okay, I guess this is just gonna happen. But then the king asks for Elizabeth to come in to his office, and he tells her about the box of papers that he gets each day from his parliament and from all that stuff. And
ministers,
he basically he tells her, all right, the stuff on top is what they want me to know, and the stuff on the bottom is stuff like meetings and stuff that they don't really feel like I need to know, and so I flip it around, and so I know everything about what's going on. And it's a cute little moment with them, and then she sees him hacking up a lung and is just like, oh god, something's still wrong. I can tell.
But you get the sense, and they play her a little bit, I don't know if it's innocent or ignorant, but you get the sense. Get the sense that she's very, very sheltered. She's super sheltered, even from a, you know, like basic education standpoint, and that comes up later. But she's unfamiliar with a lot of things that you and I would consider to be fairly normal. Like, hey, from a health perspective, something's going on here, right?
I think she's more in denial than anything else at this point, because I think once you see someone coughing up a lung, it's kind of like, oh, okay, something's still wrong with you. But as long as you're acting chill about it, I'm not going to do, like, I think
she's not going to rock the boat. Yeah, she doesn't
I think she's kind of going to her default, okay, I'm just going to be as agreeable as possible and try to make this less awkward.
But it's the stiff upper lip thing again. It's like, all right, we're going to make power through it.
I'm not going to. So I think that's what they're going for, I think. But then the king mentions that he wants to make an effort with Philip and getting to know him a little bit better. And Elizabeth, she's talking about all these plans that, and for them to go back to Malta so that he can do Navy stuff, and the stuff of Clarence House and how he's like finding imperfection everywhere, and he's like trying to do this whole architecture thing. And but the king, his expression this entire time while listening to her like plans for the future is just so sad to look at, because
he knows. I mean, he's gonna crush her.
Yeah. And he knows that this is going to change everything and they're probably not going to be able to do any of this. And I think that's another reason why he wants to make an effort with Philip, because Philip, we'll get to that scene later on, but like.
Right, but no, he says something too. But what he says to her is, you know, having the right partner, this job is like really hard, but if you've got to have the right partner to help you through this. And that's part of how they get into this whole conversation about Philip. And then he starts talking about, look, I need for you to do this tour. Mm-hmm. And so she's kind of like, oh, okay. Well, I'm not sure how Philip's going to feel about that. And so that's something she's going to have to broach with him.
Yeah. And you go to where Elizabeth is mentioning where they're going, like they're going to Australia, New Zealand, and they might be starting in Kenya, that kind of stuff. And it's a lot of places and they're going to be gone for months. And Philip is concerned about their kids and all that stuff.
He's
and
she's not like,
the kids will be fine.
Well, right.
He's not happy about him.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is that he is a very different parent than either of them had, right? And so, you know, she's used to like, yeah, my parents have to go tour around the world. That happens, you know, whatever. That is not what he wants for his kids. And you know, he's very interactive with them. And so, but a lot of what they express, and again, it's the whole Matt Smith, Claire Foy thing is unsaid.
Yeah.
It's all in like eyebrows.
You have Charles coming up and constantly asking him to play, and it's just like, this is not making things easier. And but he begrudgingly agrees, and she's just like, thank God. And then you see the king and Elizabeth exchanging looks like, oh, how'd it go? And she's just like, oh God, this is gonna be hard. She's just like, ugh, that was difficult, but she knows it's for the best, and she knows that her father appreciates it, and she wants to do this for him, and she just really wants to help out where she can, because she knows it's going to be difficult, but she wants to make things easy on him, that kind of stuff. And then you go to the next morning, where before in their conversation, Elizabeth mentioned, hey, maybe take Philip shooting. And you see the king wake up and he has a full chest full of bloody handkerchiefs. And it's just like, that's not good.
No. Then
warning signs are everywhere. But then the king goes to Philip's room, and Philip sleeps in the nude, we find out. And he gets up and he's just standing in front of the king, who's just like casually like, yeah, we're gonna go shooting now. Wolverton splash. And it's just,
well, no, part of what, you know, King George says, and again, it's the sense of humor, is like, well, that's an interesting way to greet your sovereign.
It's so funny. And he doesn't even, like, you can tell Philip's not even trying to cover himself up. He's just like, all right, I guess this is happening now.
Yeah, and we're going to go to Wolverton Splash and shoot.
Yeah. And then you see the king leave, and the king just starts laughing at him. Really funny. But then they're going to be shooting. They're in the boats, they're about to go, and he basically tells Philip that loving and protecting Elizabeth is his job now, and you will miss your career, you'll miss all of the freedom that you used to have, but this, she needs you to be there for her, and you need to do your job, because this is your job now,
right? And he's I love the way they phrase this. The writing of this series is so beautifully done, and especially, you know, George is given these incredibly wisely phrased lines. He says, there's no greater act of patriotism or love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, basically, do you understand what you're undertaking here? And Philip says,
and he says yes, but then like Philip says yes, but he's just like, do you really? Are you sure, you know? And then he's just like, I think so. And it's like, well, you're about to find out. But well, he doesn't say that, but like, still, it's like, oh God. And then you end the episode with hunting and coughing. So
hunting and coughing, but right. But there's also a part of that discussion between the king and Philip is interspersed with Elizabeth going into his office, the king's office, and, you know, basically touching that red leather covered box that has all of the papers in it, and realizing, you know, this big weight, this physical thing is going to be my responsibility soon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just, she's starting to understand what her role is going to become, and it's coming faster.
Yeah. And that's where the episode ends.
This is where the episode ends. So what is your favorite part of this episode?
I have too. I love the Christmas sequence because it just breaks my heart, but it's really well done, and I love that they show that. It's such a simple part with the carolers and them bringing the king in and him singing and all that stuff, and him just looking at his family and realizing what's about to happen and all that stuff. And it's really, really sad, but it's well done. And then the wedding sequence I love, because I love Claire Foy and Matt Smith. And yeah. I think it's also just well done with like the exposition that's interspersed in it. And I think it just works. What about you?
I was basically going to say Claire Foy and Matt Smith. I mean, just they're the reason that you want to keep watching is that you love them. You know, you love them as a couple, you love what they're creating, and you love what they have to face. And you know, there's that tension of, will they be able to face this together? Will they be able to do it? And they express that so beautifully. I just really love that. That is my number one and two things, and I would not rate them. They are together for me. After that, anything involving King George at this point, because I just, he's a really beautifully developed character and so well acted. It's just really well done. What was your worst part?
There is a brief moment where there's some political stuff at the very beginning that I don't care about. And then the graphic surgery I didn't love.
I did not love the Churchill being creepy with Venetia Scott. And that is a theme that's going to come up again. You know, she's this young, beautiful girl, and he's like clearly like kind of, I don't know that he actually does anything, and they're not like suggesting.
He doesn't do anything.
He likes to look at her, and that's a little creepy. So I didn't like that.
I'm a big fan of him, so it makes it worse.
Yeah. So that was my least favorite part. And how would you grade this episode?
I gave it an A. I think it's a really good beginning of a series. I think it sets the tone really well. And I think that's true for like every premiere of each season. I think sets the tone very well. It's what this I think it's one of the show's greatest strengths. I think it knows what it's going for the most part, especially in these first two seasons. I think it knows what it wants to do, so I think.
And you're right. I think that you have a structure for like what is this season going to accomplish. We're going to see whether or not they can make this transition as a couple and as a family. How are they going to come through this? Because you know that George's death is imminent. So how are they going to come through this? And for historical drama, because you know basically how it ends, right?
Now we do.
And it is horribly sad. Okay, and I think like the next few episodes dealing with that transition of power, I think, it's going to be interesting to see the parallels with real life now.
Yeah.
Which is part of the reason I wanted to do this, and I do want to do the rest of The Crown after go back to Ted Lasso.
On a brighter note.
I would give this episode an A, and I think that it really does, what is the goal for this season? What are we going to find out? What is the tension going to be about? And that is really a great setup. And it's a great setup for the series too. So please tune into our Ted Lasso second season.
Not necessarily done putting those out yet.
No, right. But please, continue to listen to Ted Lasso, which is a much more lighthearted thing. But season two of Ted Lasso particularly gets into some more complex issues in a funny way, I think. We're looking forward to, getting into that and digging deep into that, but coming back to this too, because I do think that The Crown is a series that's well worth watching.
Absolutely. We were going to do it anyway.
We're really motivated because I kind of want to get back in that headspace a little bit. So join us and
cheers.
Cheers.